Hey everyone, this is Josh from Solopreneur Grind, and I'm here with Brad from ManOverseas.com. Brad, thanks so much for coming on the show today.
Sure, glad to do it. I enjoyed the last time that we had a chat, and I think that people derived a lot of benefit from it, especially I'm still getting text messages from friends in my circle, and they're telling me how much they got from our chat. So if we can chat and people can get some benefit from it, man, I think this is great. I think it's great what you're doing.
Awesome. I appreciate it. And I'm looking forward to what I'm going to get out of this, because anytime we chat, whether it's in person or just over Messenger, there's just a lot of value. So just to give people more of an idea about you, can you tell us a little bit more about yourself and how you got started, specifically relating to the entrepreneurial journey that you've had?
Okay, I'm Brad from ManOverseas.com. I'm 38 years old, live in Houston, Texas. I enjoy writing about financial independence, self-development, and travel. I developed an entrepreneurial mind at a very early age. Then once I entered the real world after college, I used a side hustle to accelerate savings and investments. Now I'm quote-unquote retired and travel the world with my new bride. And I can talk about sort of where the impetus for my entrepreneurship started, and
yeah, absolutely.
I think that'll help. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great place to start.
Yeah, I think it'll help listeners understand why I've taken the path that I have. So November 7th, 1991, I was 11 years old, and I remember the day because I was watching a news conference where Magic Johnson had announced to the world that he had HIV and was retiring from basketball. And I didn't know what HIV was. And when I didn't know what something was as a kid, I would wait until my dad got home so that I could ask him, right? This is obviously pre-internet days.
Right.
So when my dad walked in the door, he told my brother and me to sit down because he needed to talk to us. And his eyes were red, bloodshot red, like he'd been crying. And I had never seen my dad cry before, so I knew that it wasn't good, but he told my brother and me that he was leaving. And so shortly thereafter, he moved out of state, and I knew that he wasn't coming back. Hmm. And, you know, it's a situation where everything you think you know about the world is no longer true. And as a kid, you can't help but wonder if you had something to do with it. There, in fact, there's a scene from Good Will Hunting that I still can't watch where Robin Williams' character is talking to Will, and he tells him that what he experienced in his childhood isn't his fault, and he keeps saying it over and over. And anyways, I have to excuse myself from the room. Like, it hits in a spot. It hits deep. And my mom was emotionally and psychologically, let's say, unwell. And so both of my parents at that time were looking out for themselves first, not us kids, my brother and me. So dealing with the weight and precariousness of that, a situation like that at that age was, it was tough, and you grow up pretty quick because you don't have a choice. And so that was easily the most tumultuous time in my life. And I share that story because that experience is intertwined with who I am today. And I know we're going to talk about how I got to where I am, but that's where it starts.
Right.
So I learned how to deal with suffering, and I think the best way to deal with suffering is to become a better person and commit to a life worth living. And I think
Absolutely.
That feelings of helplessness can drive a man or woman, for that matter, to accomplish things that he or she maybe never thought possible. So in that way, suffering can be utilized to become stronger and wiser. And when you do, what seemed to be a curse then becomes a blessing, right? So
right.
Not everyone goes through unexpected hardship that doesn't kill them. And the way that I view it now in hindsight is you know, shame on you if you let such a gift, which is suffering, go to waste. And, right. You know, I'm not even convinced that it's something that you can force on yourself. It may need to be undue hardship. Obviously, I'm not a psychologist, but I'll share a quick story with you. Mm-hmm. A friend of mine, he's a dear friend. He and I were roommates in college, very driven guy. He's an attorney like yourself. And he lost his only brother to cancer recently. And since his brother died, our conversations have deepened and intensified. He and I share an affinity for investing. He's a real estate investor like myself. But one of the things that I've noticed in him since his brother's death is that he's developed a resilience that I recognize in myself. And when he was in Houston earlier this year, he's from Louisiana, he said to me in sort of a revelatory tone, as if thinking aloud, he said, "You know, Brad, it's crazy. After what I've been through, I feel like nobody can fuck with me." Hmm. And I've felt a lot of things in my life, but like a lot of feelings that don't quite lend themselves to articulation, or perhaps, you know, maybe I never needed to find the words to describe those feelings. But right. When he said what he said, he had described exactly how I've felt most of my life.
Right.
And his words resonated so strongly with me as to like induce like a physical reaction in my body. Like I felt muscles twitching. And so our conversation is something that I won't forget, because what my friend was talking about, and I think this is important, he was talking about an ability to transcend emotional and psychological pain. Mm-hmm. And that is so key because it's so rare. And once you've endured the depths of a dark place, your pain then becomes fuel for growth. And that growth is accessible to anyone, but a lot of people won't take advantage of its inherent potential. They won't grasp it. They won't suffer through it. And they'll self-medicate, or they'll drown themselves in alcohol, you know, drown their sorrows.
Yeah.
I think it's why, so when I get asked what my favorite book is, it's Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl. He was an Auschwitz survivor, you know, something like 25 out of 26 people that went through Auschwitz died. But he believed that there was great meaning to be derived from facing unavoidable suffering with dignity. And certainly I haven't suffered anything on the scale that he did. I mean, not even close. But if he can see what he experienced as an opportunity for personal growth, then, you know, who are we is right. Kind of how I see that. So there's wisdom from deep pain. And so my friend now possesses a tolerance for stress and an aptitude for risk-taking that I think would break most people.
Right.
And it's a disposition that he's earned the hard way, right, by overcoming difficulty and sadness. And as he becomes further removed from that event, which was his brother's death, his strength and courage are only going to expand, but his perception of risk, and this is something that he said to me, his perception of risk is changed forever. Because what is a financial risk when you've lost your only brother?
Right.
Right? What's writing a big check for a real estate deal, or quitting a job to pursue some, you know, like I did, to travel the world and start writing, you know, when your parents put themselves before you, right? Mm-hmm. And you didn't know where money was going to come from.
Yeah, you know, and I don't want to jump too far ahead of you know, kind of when we come back to your scenario, but it's sounding to me like the difficulty you went through when you were 11 trumps any sort of entrepreneurial fear that a lot of us feel, that I'm sure you did feel in some respect, and you know, we can get into that. But when you have that initial hesitation or fear of starting that new business or posting that, you know, your first company post online or designing a product, I mean, that's nothing compared to those life difficulties that you and your friend and many other people have been through.
Yeah, and even putting what you write out there for public consumption and criticism, mm-hmm. or, you know, joining a conversation like this. You know, the last conversation that we had, someone commented on, so I posted our conversation on manoverseas.com mm-hmm. from the top romp show. And there was a girl who evidently I dated who left a comment at the bottom that said that, that I was arrogant. Hmm. And I find this interesting because, yeah. If I thought through all of my friends and tried to consider who else I've heard called arrogant, it would be the guy that I just mentioned. Right. And so something that I've come to realize is that you rarely hear successful people call someone arrogant. And I think the reason is because they know what it took to get there.
Right.
And it doesn't mean that they have to be arrogant themselves, but they get it.
Yeah.
So if someone ever calls you arrogant, you know, it's like, you know, maybe they'll be arrogant too someday. We may never know.
Right.
Brad, let's
go back to, so you go through that extraordinarily traumatic event when you're 11. How does that stem, or how does that relate or take us to your kind of entrepreneurial journey?
Yeah. So what happens is your comfort zone becomes the size of the world, in my case.
Right.
Where others would be scared to death, you tend to be bold. I know what's in store for my friend because I've been there, but it's a feeling of having nowhere to turn because nobody understands. But you come out of it having a greater understanding of human behavior and of the world and of yourself, where that's going to help you succeed in business. Because in business, you take a multidisciplinary approach, which is basically taking what you've learned from different aspects, or, you know, it's primarily applied to academic disciplines. But I think that what you learn from life experience can be applied equally as well. And so in my case, it helped with my self-development because I approached the business world with a serious capacity to adapt to new environments and change circumstances and new bosses, or, you know, clients, ornery clients, you know, whatever life throws at me. Mm-hmm. And so I developed a sort of stoicism without even knowing what stoicism was.
Right.
But that's very helpful, I think, in the business world. So getting to my first ever business, I was 13 years old, and I would go to the trading card store, and I would buy a box of basketball cards, and it had 36 packs in it, and the box was $40. And I would take the packs to school, and I would sell them out of my backpack for $2 a pack. So I would make $32 on each box. Right. And I started stockpiling cash because you never know, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's probably where the idea of heavily saving and investing started.
So at that young age, like, where did the wherewithal come to start saving? Because you would think such a young kid with all that cash would, you know, be hitting up the candy store, the arcade, this, that, and the other. Why do you think it was that you were different?
I think because of the wisdom derived from being forced to a dark place where you feel like, you know, you're in your room staring at the ceiling and it feels like four walls are coming in and you're screaming and nobody can hear you. But when you come down from that, all you have is time to think. And you know, this is pre-internet, so there's not a lot of distractions. You can either get on your bike and go around the block a bunch of times, or you can just sit in your room and maybe listen to some tunes, but you start to figure things out. And so I think that I was acting, my entrepreneurship, I think, stemmed from desperation, or at least fear that at some point I could face a situation like that again. So I was forced to move in with my dad a few years after what happened, you know, the story that I told when I was 11. But in the back of my mind, I'm thinking he could do that again. So
right.
I think it's fear. And when I started in the real world, I tried to live on as little of my income as possible. I think out of fear of not having money. And so I wanted to create multiple streams of income because you never know. Maybe it's a fear of abandonment. Maybe in my hindbrain, I'm afraid, you know, I'm going to lose my job or my boss is going to leave or something. But you just become conservative with saving and investing, but then also aggressive because of the boldness that you've acquired through the years.
Right, right. So how did it look when you finished school? Did you jump right into a career, or how did that go?
I did. I had a job working for a real estate company, which was a commission only job. So you don't eat unless you sell something. So I kind of devoured every book that I could just on sales and negotiating and trying to learn as much as possible so that I could increase my income. After about 10 months in the real world, I bought an $80,000 house with a 10% down loan. So I financed $72,000. And I got a roommate who happened to be the guy I talked about earlier, and he paid half of the mortgage. So I think they call that house hacking nowadays. But
right.
My income started increasing, actually doubling. It increased dramatically, and I was able to pay cash. First of all, I was able to pay off that house within 5 years and then pay cash for my next one, which was around $70,000. And, you know, those things were renting for about $1,000 a month at that time. And so, you know, after 10, 12 years in the real world, I started to acquire several properties to where I now own 5 free and clear. So, yeah, that's my experience. I was in real estate, and then I got into software, and I kept 2 jobs. So I retained my real estate license so that I could sell real estate as a side hustle.
Right.
And I guess
You were working these 2 kind of full-time jobs at the same time?
I don't know that they were full-time, that the side hustle was full-time, but one of the things that I noticed when I went from a commission-only job to a salaried position, which was in software, I was surprised at how little people worked. And I thought that I could put in as easily as much time as these folks in software and then spend my nights and weekends selling real estate. And as I got older, my friends, who were, you know, half of my clients at least, were buying more expensive houses. And, you know, they say the way to get rich is to sell expensive shit. Well,
right.
you get paid as a percentage of the sales price. So I benefited simply from having the knowledge early on and being able to apply it later on as a secondary job.
Right. And how was your approach? So you started at this tech job, and you're also doing the real estate on the side, like you said, evenings and weekends. How did you approach that? Like, what was the balance like? How did you prioritize different things? Or maybe a simpler way to ask that is just how was your life structured at that time? Like, how were you handling them both?
I thought that if I got my 20s right, that I kind of would set myself up well for life. So I was real big on, I was fanatical about self-development, trying to read every book that I could get my hands on. One of my early mentors said that the true rewards in life are on the top shelf, and the way that you get to them is by standing on the books that you read. So I bought into that, and I have read probably 25, maybe 2 books a month for maybe 10 years, and now I probably read 35 to 45 books a year. Wow. And probably 20% of them twice. So I was really big into, just a voracious learner, trying to learn as much about sales and negotiating as possible, studying human behavior. I think we talked about in our last conversation how if I had an interaction where I learned something or I was impacted in some way, that night I would write it down in my journal. Mm-hmm. And, one of my favorite books is How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie.
Yep.
And he said in that book that a person's name is the sweetest sound in the English mm-hmm. language, at least to them.
Yeah.
And so it happened several times where I would meet someone for a second time and I'd call them by name and they're like, "How do you remember my name?" And I don't say it, but I'm thinking, how could I not? I wrote it down the night I met you. So
right.
I had some idiosyncrasies like that I incorporated into my life. Whenever I speak to young people now, whenever I give a talk or something, I'll recommend 3 things. I try to keep it simple. And it's 3 things that I consider the fundamental building blocks of success, at least for me. But those 3 things are to keep a journal. And a journal is where you put your goals and who you met, what you learned, how it impacted you. If I met someone, I would underline their name in my journal. But it's just a way, writing, it really helps with clarity and thinking. And if you're somebody who is prone to anxiety, just, kind of vomiting on the page just helps with all of that. So I think it's a great way to start your day. So that was number 1, keep a journal. I tell them to be a reader of books. There's a stat that pops up frequently that says that 70% of college grads, that's those with a university degree, never read a nonfiction book after graduating, which is astounding to me. So keep a journal, read books. The 3rd one is just to be a goal setter, because so few people do that and they don't put it in writing. And in terms of setting goals, I would recommend putting them into different categories. So you have your business goals, you have your personal relationship goals, you have goals for your family or your finances, spirituality, whatever your defined categories are, and then make sure you write those down. So another thing that I've done for probably 15 years, maybe 16 years now, is on December 31st, which is the last day of the year, obviously, I would set about 90 minutes aside and I go through the year, which I have in my journal, and just reflect on how it went, and kind of, it allows me to harness that information and right. and see how I can improve for the next year. And I set my goals for the following year. And it's just really cool to see your development and how you changed over time. And you kind of cringe at what it is that you thought was important, you know, when you were 24 years old. But nice. All of that is cool to see. You know, there's a quote or a proverb that says that the unexamined life is not worth living. So I think journaling is a way to examine your life, and I think it kind of slows things down for you. And mm-hmm. I just think that of the three, that keeping a journal is probably the most important and probably been most integral to my success or whatever successes that I've had.
Right, right. That's good stuff. Brad, what would you suggest to someone who is maybe in their 20s, kind of that stage where you were starting to really ramp things up? They have, you know, a stable job, a good job, but they want to get going with some type of side hustle, some, you know, the equivalent to what you were doing with that real estate on the side. Do you have any recommendations for them, kind of how to get started or how to even find something to get started on?
It's not easy to find something, but I think there are actually more things available to for people to find nowadays than there was at the advent of the internet when I was coming out of college. So, for example, you know, I had never heard of a podcast when I was your age. So mm-hmm. what you're doing, I think, is impressive. And nowadays, we're able to leverage technology in amazing ways. You know, so if you just look at Skype, for example, as a tool that you can leverage to where, or let's say the servers that are being used for the data that is being, the information that we're getting out to people, you're leveraging all these different types of technology to scale the message. And if you have something that resonates with people and helps people, you know, whether it's through blogging or podcasting, writing a book, selling, I know a lot of people who side hustle like selling insurance or helping with social media. Like I've had an assistant that I have paid to help me with social media because I don't want to spend time promoting my blog on Instagram and Twitter and those kinds of things. But mm-hmm. for her, it's a perfect little side hustle. So if you get on Craigslist and advertise yourself as a social media expert, you will probably get some work, and I'll be the dummy that hires them. But right. So I think there's just so much out there, especially with technology. I don't think there would be a good excuse for not being able to find a side hustle.
Right, right.
Or so real estate. That's a good one.
Yeah, it sounds like it. And so I love the mentality. I'd love to hear a little bit more about your mentality when you said, if I really do well in my 20s, I'll be set for the rest of my life. Can you expand a little bit more on that and maybe go into how it was that came to fruition?
Yeah. So I remember on the last podcast that we did, you had asked me what I would do or what advice I would give to 27-year-old Brad. Mm-hmm. And I was so impressed with the question because it shows a desire to learn and grow, and it shows that you're intellectually curious. So I have no doubt that you and your listeners are separating themselves probably without realizing it. So if you were to compare yourself, let's say, to nine of your peers, if you're in your 20s and you just work 10% harder than they do, the compounding effect of that is going to be huge. So that's why I encourage young people to keep their head down. And it's not uncommon for people in their 20s to have no idea what they want to do with their lives. I mean, I think that's more common than not. But if you work on learning how to learn and you work on your disciplines, you read books, you do things like meditating and journaling that we talked about last time we spoke. The early years of discipline are going to reveal themselves and bear fruit after time. But you have to let compounding do its thing. So Albert Einstein said that compounding or compound interest is the eighth wonder of the world.
Right.
So you've got, I mean, you've probably heard it takes 10 years to become an overnight success.
Mm-hmm.
What happens is you're going to see, you're going to pick your head up after 10 years and you're going to see all of your results, and it's going to feel like magic. But that's what Einstein was talking about.
Right.
He's saying that it's the eighth wonder of the world. It's magic, and it's going to feel like it. So you pick your head up and you realize that all that effort was worth it. And,
right.
You know, that's why I consider your 20s the most important decade of your life, because if you get your 20s right, where you have your habits and your learning and your fitness and your nutrition and your work ethic and your reading, if you have all that lined up, you're going to create a serious momentum. And every discipline that you incorporate is going to affect the next. It's not like you go to the gym and then you on the way home you stop at McDonald's. It doesn't work like that. So you get your reading and your workouts and your work ethic and all of that in line, your nutrition, your fitness,
mm-hmm.
and that's the launch pad for a serious trajectory of a successful life, in my opinion. And
right.
The other thing, and you and I talked about this last time, but I wouldn't spend too much time with someone of a romantic nature that you didn't think had life potential, because you're
right.
Actually going to be more attractive as a man in your 30s than you are in your 20s, because women value things like income and status and charisma, and all of that is going to increase if you keep your head down for 10 years.
Right. Brad, can I... So what I'm gathering is, and correct me if I'm wrong, but the way I'm kind of interpreting this is, it's more important about how you're doing this type of stuff, how you're living your life, how you're approaching your work, than what it is you're actually doing, right? Because as you said, there's a million things you can do, especially with the internet now. You can be a freelancer, you can start a million types of side hustles, offer all these services. There's no shortage of opportunities. Is even more important than that just the fact that you're taking the right approach, you're setting yourself up for success, you're learning, you're eating well, you're, you know, all of those things?
Yes, and allowing compounding to take root, because it's so magical. And I think that there's never been an easier time for a young person to separate themselves, because everyone is so distracted nowadays. So you develop yourself into a lifelong learner, and you start that process young. I attended a banquet in 2014 where the speaker was the head football coach at LSU. His name is Ed Ogeron. And he told those young guys that the work ethic that you develop between the ages of 18 and 22 are going to carry you forward the rest of your life. And
right.
I so believe that. And then the next phase of your life should be developing all the things that we talked about. And you've got to have, you've got to commit not only to being a lifelong learner and a voracious reader, but you've got to learn, that's when you learn your strengths, and you want to double down on those strengths, and you want to learn to make the highest and best use of time. Right, we're all allotted the same amount of time,
right.
But we only get one shot at this thing, you know, this thing we call life. So don't waste it, right?
Right. What would you tell somebody who has no problem doing the learning, maybe they've taken care of themselves, but they're struggling with the doing, the grinding, the putting the head down, putting those long hours in, and actually taking action?
Yeah, that's a good point, because everything that you learn is pointless if you don't apply it.
Yeah, like how do you find that right balance, or like I said, maybe it's someone who has no problem with the learning side, but has not taken that first step on the doing side.
I would say start small with the tiniest thing that you can do, because that's going to inspire you to do the next thing. I know there's a viral video online. I believe the guy's an admiral, maybe former Navy SEAL. I'm not sure, but he talks about the importance of making your bed every day, and yeah, he ties
that one.
Yeah, and it's excellent, right? Because it inspires you to get the next task done, or you feel a sense of fulfillment just from knowing that you've already accomplished something, and you've set yourself up for later benefits of getting into a made bed, which is always better.
So, right.
That's what I would say, is start small.
Yeah, and just getting that first accomplishment, you know, as small as it is, can just sets you off on the right path.
Right.
That's great stuff, Brad. Can you talk a little bit of your transition? So you put your head down, you're working these two jobs, you're slowly acquiring more and more property. What's kind of the next step? What did it look like, and what was the point where you decided to drop your full-time job?
Oh, that's a good question. So it was a confluence of a lot of things happening at one time. So I had been financially independent for quite a while. So it wasn't like, oh, my passive income exceeds my expenses, I'm now quote unquote retired, I'm going to, find a hammock somewhere with a margarita. It wasn't like that. Mm-hmm. Do you want me to talk about financial independence, or?
Yeah, I mean, maybe for those who don't fully understand it, you could give a bit of a primer and how it relates to your career.
Yeah, let me do that, because I know we may have thrown the term around a few times. So mm-hmm. financial independence is basically the ability to live from the income of your own personal resources. So it's the idea is you want to decide how you want to live now versus how long you want to work, or at least free up your time, create time wealth to where you can live on your own terms. And there's an easy formula to figure out when it is that you've attained financial freedom, and they call it the 4% rule. And what it means is that if you can live on 4% of your net worth, let's say, then you are effectively financially free. So let's say you've accumulated $1 million. If you can then live on $40,000 a year, which would be $3,300 a month, roughly, then you can leave your corporate job, or you know, whatever type of employee that you are, and mm-hmm. do your own thing. So there's a whole community online. If you Google financial independence, they call it FI. There are a lot of people who have embraced that, and what they're doing basically is living on dividends and interest, usually from their a lot of them have or invested in the same Vanguard account, which is the ticker symbol is VTSAX, is very popular, and it's a broad mutual fund that covers pretty much all of the stock market. But I have taken the path of real estate. I mean, I own equities also, but the beautiful part about real estate investing is that you have passive rental income every month without touching the equities, or without touching the principal or the equities that you've acquired. So you want to max out your 401ks and your IRAs and all that stuff. But another way to figure out your financial independence number is to take your annual expenses and multiply them by 25. And you will come out to that same number to know if you are financially free, let's say. So
right.
That explains financial independence. So It was part of why I walked away from a corporate job. So that was April 2015, and I had a lucrative sales job at a Fortune, at the time, a Fortune 500 software company. I think they're Fortune, probably Fortune 600 now, but I was a sales guy and worked from home. I traveled a lot, but I had, I remember I had unlimited vacation at my disposal. Not that I was one to use it, but I think companies know that they give you unlimited vacation. I think it's better to ask for 3 weeks because you're more likely to take it when it's unlimited. You tend not to use it. But the product that I was selling at the time wasn't competitive in the market, and so the amount of money that I was projecting to make wasn't commensurate with my level of get after it. And I don't think that's being cocky. I mean, my income had always gone up, and the job that I had taken relatively recently, I had only been there a year, was just not going to continue on that trajectory. And so I was dealing, I mean, there were a lot of things. I was also dealing with headaches at that time, and I thought that it might be related to self-inflicted stress, or self-inflicted pressure to achieve more and more, or right. It could have been allergies. I didn't know what it was. So to determine whether or not it was environmental, these headaches that I was getting, or if it was somehow work-related, I decided that I would take some time off and I would travel the world. I wasn't married. I didn't have any kids. And being the voracious learner that I am, I wanted to learn as much as I could about the world and immerse myself in other cultures and see how much, I could do and learn in a year. And, I figured with the contacts that I had, made through the years and the success that I'd had, I didn't think that getting back into the swing of things would be a problem when I returned. So it wasn't actually my intention to quote unquote retire, although that's mostly what I am now, at least from software. But that's what's happened. There were several people that I talked to about going back to work, and it was a situation where I valued my time at a level that they weren't willing to pay someone who was not currently employed by a software company.
Right.
So anyway, there was a gap there, and I never quite came to an agreement with a company to go back into software. But that's enabled me to do some really cool things. I mean, I don't my assets have actually grown. I actually have a larger net worth than when I quit working in April 2015. So we had, thanks to a wonderfully good best bull market 9 years that we've ever had, but things have worked out. So I've been incredibly blessed. And I should say that any successes that I have had don't happen without the help of great people. So I've been really fortunate in that regard. I certainly can't take all the credit for any successes that I've had, not all the credit, but I think that you attract what you become. So it's sort of a situation where self-development and preparation meets opportunity. So if you look around your friends group, or you look around at your colleagues, or something we talked about in our last conversation, dating prospects, and you're not impressed with what you see, then you need to look inward, because you eventually, will arrive at the level of your own caliber. So it may be an indication, if you're not happy with the people that surround you, that is an indicator that you need to level up.
Right. That's great stuff, Brad. Maybe just to finish us off here, do you have any tips for, let's say, a mid-20-year-old who is feeling lost and knows that they want more? They love the idea of everything we've talked about, side hustle, kind of putting their head down in their 20s But they're feeling lost. They don't know where to start. I know you said previously start small, but do you have maybe like two or three very actionable things they could do kind of right away, you know, like actionable things within the next, you know, week or two, or habits that they should start with, or ways to put themselves out there to meet the right people?
Yeah, first I would start, if you don't have a journal, start keeping a journal. And understand, one of the things that I internalized in my 20s was that you're not going to get wealthy earning a salary, usually, or right, wages of any kind. So you need to know that profits are better than wages. You must own equity. So when it comes to wealth building, equity is sort of what you, where you need to focus. And for your listeners that don't understand equity, equity is just a piece of a business or a share of stock in a business. Or you can own real estate. So to figure out your equity in real estate, you basically take the amount of the amount that you owe if you have a mortgage on a home and subtract that amount from the property's value, and what you're left with is your equity. So I think that understanding that is where you start. And if you're not working with people now who are high energy, people of integrity, or people that you respect, in your 20s, you may not be able to easily get out of a situation like that. But every person that you work with or for can serve even as an anti-role model. So someone who, by their example, shows you what not to do. So I tend to, now I'm at a point in my life where I try to avoid people with inflated egos. I'm not gonna work with someone who I can't talk to like a peer. So
right. That anti-role model is, I never heard it put that way. That's a really good point. And so important, right? Almost as important as finding the right people is staying away from the wrong people.
Yeah. Yeah, and people that speak with too much certitude about what's going to happen in the future, you know, kind of the know-it-all types, mm-hmm. try to, you know, or people who condescend to those who are working beneath them, you know, try to avoid those people if you can. But if not, there's human behavior that you can learn from that example. That, you know, they say the best revenge is not to be that way.
Right.
But staying, I mean, I'm so impressed with what you're doing, because just staying intellectually curious is really important. Because so right. There was a guy that attended a Berkshire Hathaway meeting in Omaha, and he approached the microphone and he asked Warren Buffett, if you were 30 years old and you had roughly $500,000, hypothetically, what would you do? And he said, I would throw it into a mutual fund and I would put my head down and I would get back to work.
Right.
So that's wisdom. That guy's not going to be around much longer. Hmm. Glean as much as you can from guys like Warren Buffett and Charlie Munger, his right-hand man, who's also a lawyer. But those guys will tell you that you want to be fearful when others are greedy, and greedy when others are fearful. So I try to internalize things like that. And all that information is available to guys in their 20s today. And it was less accessible to me in my 20s. So information scarcity is not the problem. It's attention, because we live in a distracted world. So anyway,
and those two guys specifically, there's so many, especially if you're short on cash, maybe you can't go buy a dozen books. There's so many YouTube interviews with those two guys online. If you haven't seen them, that would be a great place to start, I would say.
That's exactly right. And I would not view books as unaffordable. There's no better money than you that you can spend than an investment in yourself. So I actually don't believe at all in overspending on books. I mean, I'm very disciplined. I've tracked every expense, every dollar of expense since I graduated from college. And the amount of money that I spend on books, I mean, it doesn't even factor into the budget, because it's the best money that you can spend. So don't ever avoid spending money on books.
Yeah, and I don't know how you buy yours. I like, walking into a bookstore can get expensive, but now, I mean, depending on where you live, obviously, a lot of used bookstores, kind of the thrift shops, and there's thrift shop bookstores online now. I've bought books online for $4 or $5. Thriftbooks.com is what I've been using. You can get pretty good books in not perfect condition, but, you know, very good condition, definitely readable condition, for pennies on the dollar, if that's a concern. Brad, one last question. It's kind of selfish, but I think it'll benefit everyone. If someone is, their head's down, they're working, they've worked up some savings, they want to get into real estate, they haven't ever before, what's the best way to get in? And especially for someone who's maybe living in an area like myself where I couldn't find a shoebox for $80,000, you know what I mean? So maybe prices are a little bit higher. I mean, do I look elsewhere and not live in it? Because I love the idea of buying a 2 or 3 bedroom something and renting out parts of it. But what if do I just have to put my head down for longer and come up with a bigger down payment? Or how would you recommend getting into it?
Well, the barriers to entry, in terms of if you wanted to get into like a side hustle of selling real estate, the barriers to entry are nil. In terms of buying, I did have an advantage when I came out of college. I got a stated income loan, which is basically you don't share your income or your assets, and they give you a loan with a higher interest rate. And, you know, $80,000, that place that I bought for $80,000 is almost doubled in value now. But that's not saying much, because you're talking about 2002 to 2018, 16 years. I mean, inflation in itself is going to take care of much of the gain there. So incomes have certainly risen to the point where your income should probably be about proportional to a, let's say, $140,000 home. You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So $80,000 isn't what it used to be. I mean, that home that I own now is worth significantly more, but your income is probably higher. So I don't know if they have $140,000 places where you live, but I certainly took on debt for my first one, and I'm going to take on a little debt for my next one that my wife and I are going to purchase together. You know, maybe your loan is a little bigger, but you need a place to live, right? So I have a friend
I'm paying rent right now, and it feels like I'm lighting cash on fire every month when I make the payment.
Yeah. Yeah, I have a friend that's been paying roughly a little less than $2,000 a month rent for 15 years, because he always thought that he might move to New York or Chicago or wherever his job took him, and it just so happened that he stayed in Houston. So you add that money over 15 years, and you're looking at a few $100,000. So I didn't want to do that, especially being in real estate. I understood the benefits of equity buildup and what we now call house hacking. So I tried to find the cheapest place I could. There wasn't a whole lot less available that was less than $80,000. So just finding what I could afford, finding a roommate to help pay down the principal, and going from there. So I think it's still possible, but
It sounds like, you know, more of a numbers game based on your income and the market that you're in.
Yeah, probably so. And I wish I could give you better advice, but where are you, in Toronto?
I'm up in Canada, and Toronto specifically, the market's just gone crazy the last few years, which also means the rental market has gone crazy. So the rental prices are great if you're an owner, but it's, you know, bigger barriers to get in, just because it requires a little bit more upfront. And then when you're a solopreneur without too much history of income, you know, the banks get a little more suspicious Canadian banks especially. So, but maybe we could take this to off air. We don't have to to bore the listeners with details, and you know, I don't want to share too many financial numbers. But I really appreciate that insight, Brad. Thanks for coming on. We're coming on about an hour now, and it's been really awesome. Everything you've been talking about. Do you have any kind of last words for the audience?
Last words. Check out the blog. I write on manoverseas.com, and if you've enjoyed this conversation, I think that you will probably derive some benefit from the stuff that I write, which is self-development stuff and investing in finance type of stuff, and just random thoughts that I have on the culture and that kind of thing, travel. So.
Yeah, we'll have a link to it, manoverseas.com. I can vouch for it. I've read more than a handful of your articles. They're great, covering, you know, this type of stuff, real estate, financial independence, some more thought-provoking kind of reflections that I found really cool. So, Brad, thanks again for coming on. Really appreciate it, and hopefully we'll chat again soon.
Sounds good. Thank you, Josh. I appreciate it, man.
All right. All the best.
You too. Bye-bye.